Welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your radio reading service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading some more information from Bob Tart's book, Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home, and if we have some time, I'll be reading articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to begin today's readings with Bob Tart's Kitty Cornered. In the last reading, we learned that Franny's broken pelvis and dislocated leg had incapacitated her and made Bob very sorrowful. Though he did notice that she blinked lovingly at him, which lifted his spirits and made him hopeful for her recovery. And now we begin the reading. Agnes didn't take long to turn Franny's injury to her benefit. Although she had only nosed around the porch for a minute or two, she'd worked out the mathematics of the situation. Adding Franny's immobile carriage to Franny's subtraction of the rest of the house, Agnes began dividing her day between the upstairs and the basement. The inevitable moment arrived when she bleated at the door to go out. I thought up several reasons against it. None of them convinced me in the end, considering that Agnes had spent almost as much time outdoors as indoors over the last 13 years. She'd come to us as a stray, just like Franny, and boasted far more street smarts than I'd ever had. So I opened the door. I watched her as she became queen of the world. She streaked between the pine trees. She made the wind blow through the winds. She dug holes in Linda's vegetable garden, climbed the gatepost, fled from the geese, soaked up every inch of daylight, and brought out Venus, dangling low on the horizon. I didn't know if Franny envied her, lying on her pillow on her cardboard box top, but I did. I needed to go outside. I needed to escape from worry. I needed to run to the river with Agnes flying behind me. "You need to go on your little trip with Bill," said Linda. Just the thought of the yellow-headed blackbird, half midnight, half blazing sunshine, put a half smile on my face. Bill had phoned the ranger's office at Nyangqing Point, State Wildlife Area, and learned that this was probably the final week if we wanted to see the yellow-headed blackbird. After that, the handful of courting males would stop singing, sink behind the cattails, and disappear. "Franny can take of herself now," Linda said. We shuddered down a deeply rutted gravel road. The weeds that brushed the Volvo Bill had named Turbo were so high we might as well have been driving through a tunnel. Bill turned off the CD. He was playing Buddy Ebsen's Say Howdy to Anyone just to annoy me, and I needed to listen for birds. "You don't want to enjoy Everything's Okay one more time. It's my new theme song." Buzzes, zips, and trills swirled past us in a rush of heat when I rolled down the window. "So, that's your philosophy?" I shouted above the tire noise. "Everything's okay?" He rolled up my window. "My what? You told me twice you had a philosophy of life, or a happiness, or something." Sunlight blanketed out the sky and the screen of the GPS, which didn't recognize the road we were on anyway. It showed the icon of a car in empty space. "I guess it's just letting things happen, more or less." "Kind of a Zen thing, huh?" I asked. "Living in the present moment? That sort of thing?" "God, no. Anything but the present moment. I avoid it at all costs." We reached a wide spot at the end of the road near the observation tower. I brought a hat this time. Last year we had trudged around the cattails ponds for hours in the heat that sapped our wits, leaving us no wiser and no closer to the yellow-headed blackbird. This year we were better prepared for the grueling hike that was exactly what I needed to derail my anxiety over Franny. "Give me your water bottle." He fitted it into a survival belt, bulging with loops and pockets that he'd grabbed from the back seat. Then he wrestled his field guide into the belt. "I've got organic blueberries and fair trade peanuts in case we work up a mighty hunger." He flung open the door. "Anything else we need?" "Yeah, luck." The plan was to climb the tower and pick a starting point for our search. As Bill's survival belt slipped off, I heard what sounded like a red-winged blackbird, as interpreted by Buddy Ebsen. "Yellow-headed blackbird." I gasped. It was shockingly beautiful, grafting the brilliant head of a yellow warbler onto the body of a cowbird. "Isn't that one?" asked Bill, pointing to a second patch of weeds less than 20 feet from the car, sitting with a female. After that, it was all anticlimactic as we hiked the ponds. We surprised a trio of black-crowned night herons that barked like dogs, watched the northern harrier conduct its ghostly glide in search of prey, and heckled the eastern kingbirds that shadowed us. But our peak experience had long since faded. I couldn't get Franny off my mind, and I wanted to go home. Franny was still box-top bound when I got back. I had only seen her up on her feet that one time, and I was starting to wonder if a three-legged hobble was as good as it would get. I had met dogs and cats that navigated quite nimbly as tripods, so Franny could certainly learn to cope without the use of one leg. But I could tell her lack of progress frustrated her. Being an invalid was bringing out the Lucy side of her personality. Maybe she was sick of hearing about the yellow-headed blackbird. I was telling her that the blackbird was the most beautiful bird that I'd ever seen, but my little girl is even prettier when she whacked my hand with her front paw. Thinking that she required a treat to elevate her mood, I microwaved a dollop of fancy cat food. It had come in a microscopic can and cost more per ounce than opium. Back on the porch, I was shocked to find her planted in front of me on the welcome mat, standing on all four legs. I didn't want her crossing paths with Queen of the World, Agnes, who had sidled up behind me in the hopes of sharing the food. The resumption of warfare didn't strike me as the best recuperative strategy. Without thinking, I clapped my hands to disperse the opposing generals, a stupid thing to do. A startled Agnes flew up the stairs, limping but moving assuredly. Franny scurried across the porch and vaulted up the windowsill. While I was thrilled that she had rejoined the quadruped club, she had gone one hurdle too far for my peace of mind. Mooby's bathroom vanity gymnastics had caused me enough grief already. I didn't need a second feeble cat trying to break an Olympic record, and who knew what else? I lifted Franny off the sill to set her down on her box-top bed. But just as she loved to be petted while she ate, she now apparently associated her accident with being carried. She clung to my ribcage as if there were a tree trunk as she squeaked and squawked pathetically. I touched her down on the floor, and she trotted over to her cardboard box while I retreated to the bathroom to examine several puncture wounds. "Where's Agnes?" I asked Linda as she held the doorknob. "Outside, taking a chipmunk census." "Kitchen door closed?" she nodded. "But that gate isn't going to do any good. Franny will fly right over it." "Not with a bum hip." I checked the baby gate at the foot of the stairs. It's enough to discourage her. "Until she breaks on it and knocks it over," Linda said. Thanks to the nurturing effects of the stream of worry I directed toward Franny, she was walking more smoothly and less like the wind-up toy soldier every day. We didn't want any hitches in her recovery, so we confined her to a single room at the time to reduce the temptation to rocket around at high speeds. And above all, we kept her away from certain cantankerous cats. Cantankerous Cat had other plans. I let Franny in, and while I fiddled with the gate, Agnes darted out from behind the rocking chair and charged at Franny. Franny stumbled backward and seemingly cowed. Then she stiffened her front legs and slingshotted herself at Agnes at the music of a growl from deep inside her chest. Agnes leaped over the gate, banging it with her foot. Franny followed, sailing over it like an Olympic hurdler, chasing Agnes into the upstairs bedroom. That victory seemed to stimulate the healing process. To our amazement, the limp all but vanished within a couple of weeks, the better for Franny to pack back and forth in front of the doors. "I don't want her going outside again," I said. "I'll worry about her every minute." "I know, but she isn't happy in the house," Linda said. "And we really don't know what happened to her. Didn't the vet say that she might have fallen from a tree? We can't keep her away from everything." I didn't like it, but I knew that Linda was right. Franny was a stray who needed her space, so after agonizing about it for a while, I threw open the exit. To her credit, she changed her behavior. On the plus side, she no longer vanished into the woods for hours at a time. Following Lucy's example, she clung to the periphery of the house, snoozing on the picnic table, stretching out on a sunny patch of lawn, or sitting contentedly on the cement steps. On the negative side, she had made up her mind to be more resistant than ever about coming back inside. After dinner, once I had lured the ducks and geese into the barn with table scraps, I opened the basement door for Franny, who had been trotting along at my heels. Instead of following me into the house, she rubbed back and forth against the doorframe. Then, making certain that I was watching, she pranced over to caress a picnic table leg. I returned a few minutes later with a chunk of warm chicken on a plate. A dance ensued that brought her an inch inside the door, open before she pirouetted and skittered back to the picnic table. When I walked over to her, she trotted away. "She's hardly been outdoors for weeks," I told Linda. "I'll give her another half hour." She performed the doorframe rubbing routine twice more. When it got to be 8:30, she had parked herself less than 3 feet from the basement door, but farther away from coming inside than ever. The more I wheedled her, the more coquettish she became. "That's enough," I told her. "You've got to come in, or you're not going out again for a very long time." She let me get within inches of grabbing her. I was angry enough to violate our no-picking-up-the-cat understanding when she dashed under the pine tree, reappearing to tease me with the lovable kitty blink, which stung. It was a desecration of that blink that she had given me at the emergency clinic. How could she treat me this way after everything I've done for her? I asked Linda, sounding remarkably like a sitcom parent. I made one final attempt to coerce Franny in, but she wouldn't even poke her nose out from under the tree. A little after 9 o'clock, as I settled in for a long night's journey into anxiety, Linda announced that the cat who had made a mousy toy out of me was at the side door scratching to come in. On the porch, I fed her in silence, banged the door shut, and peered out through the living room window as she hopped onto her box to lick her feet. "You can't really expect anything else from Franny," Linda said as we got into bed. "She already traded a lot of her freedom for the security of living with us, and since her accident, she's given up even more." I didn't say a word. If I couldn't argue with Franny, I could give Linda the cold shoulder for her taking her side. I was about to pull up the covers and turn toward the wall, but I relented and kissed her goodnight instead. I loved each of our cats, even the next to impossible to love Lucy, but Franny struck me as special. Her virtues wouldn't impress most people. She lacked Mubi's friendly personality. Agnes bettered her in the feistiness department, and Lucy was second to none as a chair hogger, to give credit where credit was due. Even our duck Victor was more affectionate. Franny could be quirky, twitchy, fearful, proud, manipulative. No, wait a minute. That was me. There was a deep and possibly pathological bond between us, making me feel like she was the kind of cat that came along just once in a lifetime. That reading came from Bob Tartt's Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. Next week, we'll begin Chapter 10, Don't Call Him Mr. Cuddle Wuddle. Our next reading asks the question, why do dogs chase their tails? If you've ever watched a dog whirl around in circles trying to catch that elusive tail, you may ask yourself, what's going on? Or you may find yourself laughing or scratching your head in bewilderment. Tail chasing is a common behavior. It can range from playful antics to more serious issues. In this article, we'll explore the reason for amusing behavior, bust some myths, and share fun facts that will make you appreciate your fun more. The playful pursuit. For many dogs, chasing their tail is simply a form of play. Puppies in particular engage in this because they are naturally curious and energetic. They're exploring their bodies and learning the environment. When a puppy spins in a circle, it can delight in the movement of its tail. It's like fascinating toys that are just always out of reach. As dogs mature, some continue to chase their tails as a form of entertainment. The behavior is pronounced in certain breeds known for their high energy levels, such as border collies. However, it's important to recognize that while tail chasing can be entertaining, it should not be an obsessive behavior. The instinctive drive. Beyond playfulness, there are instinctual reasons why dogs chase their tails. Their instincts often drive their behavior. In the wild, animals engage in various forms of play and hunting skills. Chasing their tails can mimic the pursuit of play, allowing dogs to practice their reflexes. This instinctual behavior can be seen in many breeds, especially those that are bred for herding. Interestingly, though, some dogs may also tail chase as a means of self-entertainment when they feel bored. If a dog is left alone for extended periods, it may resort to the behavior out of sheer boredom, and are highly social animals and thrive on interaction with their human companions. Health concerns and obsessive behavior. While tail chasing is often harmless, it can sometimes indicate underlying health issues. It may be to discomfort or pain caused by conditions such as allergies or skin irritations. If you notice that your dog is excessively chasing its tail, it's essential to consult with your veterinarian to check out any medical conditions. In some cases, tail chasing can develop into compulsive behavior. That's particularly true if it becomes repetitive and obsessive. Dogs with obsessive-compulsive behavior may chase their tails where it affects their overall well-being. If you suspect your dog falls into this category, professional veterinary help or animal behaviorists may be necessary. Fun facts about tail chasing. Tall size matters. Some breeds are more prone to tail chasing than others. For example, fluffy tails tend to engage in this behavior more frequently, as their tails are more visually apparent and easier to catch. Dogs and mirrors. A dog may chase its tail when it sees its reflection in a mirror, mistaking it for another dog. This can lead to a delightful yet confusing game for your pup. Tail as a toy. Some dogs use their tails as a form of entertainment. They may not only chase their tail, but also tug on it or playfully bite it, treating it like a toy. Cultural references. Tail chasing has been the subject of fascination in popular cultures, in movies, and in videos, where dogs are portrayed as silly and playful. This has further popularized the idea of pet lovers watching dogs chase their tails. Ways to direct tail chasing. If your dog is prone to chasing its tail, there are several ways to redirect the behavior. 1. Use interactive toys. Invest in interactive toys that challenge your dog mentally. Puzzle toys help keep your dogs occupied and engaged. Training sessions. Teaching your dog new commands or tricks can be a great way to provide stimulation. Incorporate short training sessions throughout the day to keep your dog focused. Socialization. Arrange play dates with other dogs or take your dog to the dog park. Socializing with other dogs can help reduce boredom and provide a distraction from tail chasing. Exercise. Regular exercise is essential for a dog's physical and mental well-being. Daily walks and bark park sessions can really help channel your dog's energy into more productive activities. The joy of watching. Ultimately, tail chasing can be a delightful aspect of a dog's personality. Watching a dog engage in tail chasing can bring joy and laughter to both pet and its owner. It serves as a reminder of the playfulness of the dog. Whether it's a puppy spinning in circles or an adult dog chasing its tail out of sheer behavior, it is a testament to joy and energy that our furry companions bring into our lives. As responsible pet owners, it's essential to understand the reasons behind the behavior and to keep our dogs happy and healthy. Providing them with the right movement, the environment, socialization, can nature and nurture their well-being and enjoy all the quirky antics that they have to offer. While tail chasing can be an amusing sight, it's a vital thing to pay attention to what is occurring. Understanding the reasons behind this behavior can help us better care for our furry friends and match the bond we share with them. So the next time you see your dog whirling around in pursuit of its tail, take a moment to appreciate the joy and playfulness that the dogs bring into our lives. With love for pets and a shared commitment to their well-being, we hope this article has brought an understanding of why dogs chase their tails and how to foster healthy habits in our beloved pet parenting activities. This article Ask the question, why do dogs chase their tails?
Is your dog overweight? This article on canine obesity sheds some light on the topic. A new study looking at obesity in specific breeds and spay-neuter timing provides new information for dog owners and veterinarians. The study builds on an earlier foundation-funded project. In that initial study, researchers looked at 155,000 dog records from Banfield Pet Hospital clinics and found the risk of obesity differed with dogs' body size and age at sterilization. The multidisciplinary research team, convened by the Alliance for Contraception in Cats and Dogs, wanted to delve in deeper into specific breeds with these size groups. What the team found was that certain breeds were vulnerable to overweight and obese outcomes, and these examples include pugs and Labrador retrievers. Timing of spay and neuter can compound the risk. The take-home message for dog owners and veterinarians is that breed confirms and confers overweight and obesity risks. We hope our study helps veterinarians and clients make the best decision for their dog, especially in breeds at higher risk for obesity and overweight concerns, said Valerie Benka, program consultant and lead investigator. This might involve timing of spaying and neutering, but it's also essential to remember that diet and exercise decisions are huge contributors to maintaining a healthy weight. This article, Canine Obesity, New Study Finds That Breeds Matter. The article comes from Morris Animal Foundation's magazine, Animal News, the December 2025 edition. From Paw Prints, the magazine from the North Shore Animal League, comes this article, Saved from the Shadows. After his world was turned upside down, Cornelius sat alone in a dark, windowless room, confused, heartbroken, and waiting for someone who would never return. His beloved owner had passed away, and this 13-year-old Chihuahua mix was brought to a municipal shelter in New York City, where, like many senior pets, he was at risk of euthanasia. Thanks to our no-kill mission, however, Cornelius made his way to the safety of our Port Washington, New York campus, where he's getting another chance to find love. Rescue team leader Carla Agostinello coordinated Cornelius's transport and remembers how he first came to her attention. Every day we get emails from animal care centers in New York City with animals to rescue. These are usually animals with medical conditions. They're too young, or his case, too old. Nothing breaks my heart more than an owner dies or is placed in a senior facility and can no longer care for the pet. Some extended family members do not want the burden of taking on the animal and will dump them at the shelter. I can only imagine the confusion and the heartache that an animal feels not knowing where their owner is. When Carla arrived at the center, Cornelius was tucked away in a ground floor cage, shut down and staring at the back wall. It was very sad, she recalled. But once we leashed him up and walked outside, his tail was wagging. Despite his age, Cornelia has the spirit of a young pup. He sports an adorable underbite, making his gentle grin all the more charming. Since arriving, he's been staying in the office of shelter medical supervisor Deanna Marino in our pet health center, who has a soft spot for underdogs. Cornelius was shy at first, she shared, but now he's opened up. He loves going on walks and playing fetch with his toys. He does bark a lot, but it's just because he wants your attention. He really enjoys being outside and spending time with people. Even though he's 13, he acts like a puppy. Sadly, senior pets like Cornelius are too often overlooked in crowded shelters. Older dogs and cats are passed over for younger animals, but they can make some of the most loyal and rewarding companions. They tend to be housebroken, calm, and deeply affectionate. And as Carla knows from personal experience, adopting a senior can be profoundly meaningful. I adopted a senior dog, Nikki, from a senior situation. She was dumped at Brooklyn ACC at 14 years old. I thought I would be giving her a year or two, but she lived until she was 19. The love she gave me in return was truly special. It was like she knew I saved her. Deanna echoed, senior dogs like Cornelius are great because you get to see their full personality and they still have so much love to give. Cornelius' story also highlights why planning for your pet's future is so important. When his owner passed away, there was no one to step in until our rescue team did. Through our Safe Haven Surviving Pet Care Program, pet owners can ensure that if something happens to them, the beloved animal will be cared for. Safe Haven guarantees transport to our campus, full medical care, and placement in a loving home. The program is funded through estate plans or beneficiary plans and covers up to 6 pets per household, giving peace of mind to loving owners and the protection to animals who rely upon them. From a crowded shelter kennel to a cozy office bed, Cornelius is currently thriving. He plays with toys, soaks up affection, and reminds everyone around him how much joy senior pets have to offer. Thanks to our no-kill mission, this 13-year-old sweetheart now has the chance to find a new family and to keep wagging his tail well into the future. This article, Saved from the Shadows, appeared in the North Shore Animal League's magazine, Paw Prints, Issue 4, Winter 2025. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.